the question was asked, there are certain halachot or customs that seem to have changed, and it seems to be an impact of where we were. We know that in Israel we had tcheles. When we were exiled, we didn't have tcheles. In Israel, we fashioned our tefillin out of one hide. And in Chutz Lartz, where we didn't have access to large pieces of hides, we made dakos or pshutos tefillin out of multiple pieces of hides and relied on certain leniencies. And in with regard to those things, when does the halacha change, when you could afford to, and when doesn't the halacha change? And coming off of that, you want us to discuss also our pronunciation, which also seems to be impacted by where we live and how... how we pronounce things and how should we pronounce them today. So let's go in that order, but let's begin by recognizing that there's a marked difference between the first two examples we gave and the third. The first two are defined and verifiable based upon what we have in the Talmud. Meaning the concept of making tefillin from one hide is preferable. You learn Talmud, you learn Rishonim, you understand that. The third point you made, that needs discussion as to whether it's verifiable, what is the correct pronunciation of the Torah. So we have to just bear that in mind, that putting the three in one question is really not so accurate. So let's begin. We used to get tcheles off the coast here in Yafo, and we had great manufacturing of tcheles, as is recorded in the Tanakh. And then when we were exiled, we lost that. During the first exile, the Syrian king left remnants here in Israel to produce tcheles for him. He made money off of it. So we didn't lose the tcheles production. And during the second exile, it seems that at some point we lost it. The Kabbalah has a certain discussion as to why, and a certain discussion as to when it would come back. But at the end of the day, we lost the tradition. We don't even know what species we derived tcheles from. If we were able to verify it, maybe we would go back to it. Maybe. If we do all kinds of research, and we have to make all kinds of assumptions, and then we decide this is tcheles, so that's a discussion among the rabbis today. And most rabbis have not accepted what they produce and say is tcheles as tcheles. So you'll quote to me, there's Rav Tendler and there are other big rabbis who do accept it, fine. But if you look at the spectrum of big rabbis out there, I think you'll find that that the majority do not accept it as having been proven as being tcheles. So there we run into a problem. We don't know what it is. If we could verify it, then being that it's written in the Torah, and that's the halacha, so then obviously we would do it, if only we could verify that this was tcheles. When it comes to the tefillin, the same holds true. Our tefillin today are not like the majority of the tefillin were in Europe. In Europe, they had to rely on certain leniencies, putting together pieces of hide. Today, where we have a tremendous amount of large animals being slaughtered, and we have access to larger hides and thicker hides, we have an easier time making the whole tefillin out of one piece of hide. And so today our tefillin are much better than in ancient times. Our tefillin are much tougher, much thicker, and we do make tefillin out of one piece of hide in accordance with the preferable way of doing halacha. We don't rely on leniencies when we don't have to. So even though technically you could say, for a few hundred years the Jews didn't do this, the reason they didn't do this is because they couldn't. Just like you'd see their Sifrei Torah were of all kinds of different hides, and today we have these beautiful parchments. They're all the same size. Today it's easier. Once upon a time, they didn't have such big hides. They'd have a measly goat that they'd slaughter for the town each week. They'd save the hides over the weeks. Finally, they'd get enough hide, enough parchment to make a Sefer Torah. They couldn't make a Sefer Torah the way we make it today. Their Sefer Torah, were very heavy because they didn't have the plethora of hides to choose from like we do in order to get exactly the size and to be able to work it and get the best type of hide, etc. So we're very spoiled. We can make our Sifrei Torah the easiest way and lightweight and everything. You don't need to rely on all kinds of things that they did need to rely on. That's true. And in that regard, where we can, we we do things better than they did them. So our Sifrei Torah are lighter. There's no mitzvah. Sifrei Torah should be heavy. And our tefillin are made of one hide. And our tefillin are made as accurate as our machinery can make them. Even though technically it doesn't have to be that way. But why not? Right? We can afford to. And when it comes to kashrus today, you'll find that we do stringencies that no generation ever did. Because today, you know, it's cheap. It's easy. Everything's mass-produced. So it's much easier to be a Jew. It's easy to eat kosher. You don't like Kit. You don't want to eat Kit Kat. You don't want food that's not authorized Chav Yisrael by everyone. So you eat Kif Kif. You know, everything you want. They've made us a change for you know. So they today it's much easier. No, that's the idea of Kif Kif. You even look at the wrapper. It's almost like the Kit Kat. It's, I like Kit Kat better. But okay. at any rate, that covers those two. Because we don't really have a tradition that contradicts it. The halacha says this is better, we couldn't afford to, so when we could afford to, we do it better. It's not a tradition otherwise. So far, so good?
I guess when it comes to tefillin, I'm talking about the substances that were used for the ink, I think.
Can I say that? Rabbi, like for example, the Rambam I think says how when you take the hide, how do you have to put it? We mix it with some chemicals, and in the end, it comes out some brownish color. So how come like the way they make the hides today, they don't use the same chemicals? And also regarding kashrut, Rambam says you have to check the knife 12 times, inspect it, and then this and that. And before you can check that.
So those details we have to sit down and learn inside. I'm not sure we're understanding correctly what it says.
And everybody's eating shakes today.
Yeah, according to some people.
Let's learn it again. Let's learn it. You know, you guys are making very far-fetched statements. Let's sit down and learn it. And then let's see if you still think that's what it says. I'll share with you a story. This story goes back about 25 years ago. About, maybe more, somewhere around 25 years ago. So, the story begins 1,000 years ago. The story begins with the Machlokas Rashi Tosfos. The Gemara says, if you write a Yud in a Sefer Torah, so we have a marker here, right? It's this permanent thing. This is what
I'll
I'll draw it on a piece of paper. It's okay. We'll do it differently.
If you ever have to use a permanent dry erase, use a dry erase on it, it'll erase the permanent.
What is dry erase?
Dry erase.
Dry erase.
You take a permanent marker on a dry erase board, like this one here.
Right.
And then you realize later that it was permanent. You take a dry erase, right over the line, erase permanent, it. And then erase it, and everything will come off.
Yeah, okay. Dry erase and marker. Dry erase.
Okay. So, we have over here the letter Yud, right? The letter Yud has the right leg that goes down over here. And when you pull the Yud from here to here, you also make a sharp point on the bottom left side. You, the way you write is you make a line like this, and then you pull the quill this way, and then make another line going down like that. That's how you write it with a Sefer Torah quill. Now, the Gemara says, if you write a Yud that's missing a Kutzo Shayud, the point, the edge of the Yud, it's puzzled, disqualified. In a Sefer Torah and Tefillin, which edge did they mean? So Rashi says, well, it means this. You don't have this leg, that's not a kosher Yud. Tosfos says it means this. You don't have this, it's not a kosher Yud. So we Ashkenazim are careful to go with Tosfos. We ensure that our Yuds have this jutted edge down here, coming out of drop. Sfaradim don't go with Tosfos. So many Sfaradim have in their Sifrei Torah and Tefillin a Yud without this edge on the bottom. Not every sofer goes with Tosfos. Along came a group of people and decided that they want to have an organization that will validate, will give seals and stickers on tefillin and mezuzahs and sefer Torah, and they'll be like the kashrus agency of the world for sefer Torah, tefillin, and mezuzah. Okay, it's a good business. You can make money. And they came to Rabbi Feinstein and they said, what does the Rav say? If we find tefillin that have this left leg that's not there, isn't it disqualified? So he said, no. So they brought him a list of 15 rabbis that hold it's disqualified. Rabbis from 150 years ago. So he looked over the list and said, no. So they said, but all 15 rabbis say it's disqualified. So he said to them, you guys want to disqualify it, right? You want to say it's disqualified. You have your list of 15 rabbis who say it's disqualified. So you could say it. I don't agree with you. What was lying behind it? I have a friend who went to his house, to Rabbi Feinstein's house, and brought in the question in writing and received an answer in writing. And Rabbi Feinstein said, being that you have whole communities in Israel that this is how they do it. This is how the Sfardim write their yurts. You can't disqualify that. You can't tell an Ashkenazi, don't take an Aliyah on a Sfardi Sefer Torah. The Sfardim are kosher Jews. They have this tradition. It's true that Rabbeinu Tam held that you need that left leg on the yud. That's true. It's true that lechatchila, ideally, when you write a Sefer Torah for an Ashkenazi, you should ensure that leg is there. But that's true. He wasn't contesting that. But to say what they wanted to say, that when we find a tefillin, we go out to the Midwest, we check people's tefillin for them, you understand? It's very pious, right? We'll check their tefillin. And then we'll tell them their tefillin are puzzle, and they have to buy new tefillin from us because, look, all the yuds are missing the left leg. And look, we'll show you where it says in Aloha, you have to have a left leg. And without the left leg, it's puzzle. My Feinstein said that you can't do. There you're already saying that what the Sfardim do isn't kosher. That you can't do. You can't come and say a congregation in Israel has a tradition to do it this way, and we can't go up on their Sefer Torah. We can't say a bracha when we get an Ali and a Sfardi shul. But it's Rabbeinu Tam, but it is quoted. Yes, lechatchila we do it. There's a difference between saying ideally we do it and looking at another congregation and saying they're disqualified. We don't do that. So we're touching on a subject. You guys are bringing up a big subject. But this is where you need tradition. You know, that requires a much broader conversation. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel had differences on which women they may marry. Meaning there were certain women which, according to Beis Shammai, were disqualified from marriage. They were considered disqualified from marrying an average Jew because of... we can't go into all the details. Beis Hillel held that they was mutter. Says the Mishnah, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai would marry one another freely, even though they disagreed. And Beis Hillel would warn Beis Shammai, they'd say, but you guys don't date these girls. These girls don't fit your tradition. There are times where we say, according to their tradition, this is not acceptable. When I have a Sephardi guest in my house, I make sure to have challah that's not sweet. So I can make hamotzi in accordance with his opinion as well. We don't always say, well, this is my custom, you should accept it too. Sometimes we say, let me respect your custom. I'll try to do things best in accordance with your custom. But we have to take great, 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 great care before we dare say something bad about another Jew. And a person who, God forbid, says something about a whole congregation, you know, I wouldn't want that weight on my shoulders. It's very grave to say something like that. Even where we learn halacha and we come to a conclusion and we say the halacha should be this way. And we discussed earlier how much power we have where we could say that. The halacha will sometimes say, you're not allowed to do that because then you're saying that everyone who doesn't do it this way is wrong. In the beginning of the century, there was a certain stringency that became popular and today everyone does it. Today, if you have weddings where they don't do it, some people won't even attend. I had very, very close friends, and I was at weddings where they wouldn't attend because they didn't do the stringency. Well, 60 years ago, when this stringency started, Rabbi Feinstein was against it. So they asked him, why are you against it? It's a good stringency. It's a correct custom. He said, it's a stringency which some of the congregation will keep and some of the congregation won't keep. And if you start a stringency which will cause a rift in Am Yisrael, where people will say, well, I don't do this by you, and you're not in keeping with my stringencies, that's a stringency that's unacceptable. So I'd rather forego the stringency. And when he married off his own children, he did not apply that stringency by his own children's weddings. He said, I don't want to say what it is. because he said, you don't start a stringency, even though it's a good stringency, if you're going to have people who don't do it, and then that will cause a rift in Am Yisrael. According to some commentaries, the reason why Mordechai instituted on Purim that we give mishloach manot, we give ready-made food to one another. Manot, by definition, means ready-made food. That means you cook the food in your home and you bring it to your neighbor as mishloach manos. The idea was, there were Jews who were saying, he bowed down to Haman. What was he really thinking when he bowed to Haman? Maybe he thought Haman was a god. And Jews weren't so comfortable with one another. People were talking. Along came Mordechai and instituted, every Jew eats from every Jew. So long as you know he's a kosher Jew, there's no reason not to eat from him. And instituted that we give one another on Purim, manot, food that is ready to eat. Every Jew gives every other Jew. The idea of unity, the idea of us being together is so critical. For a person to think, I can say that whole community, they're not, someone said they're not eating kosher? I'd be very careful. I wouldn't say that, and I wouldn't... If not for the fact that I respect you, I wouldn't even respond to the question. But it's a very, very far-fetched thing to say, and it's very problematic because, you know, we have a concept in halacha that we don't do things that make previous generations look bad, even if the halacha seems to say like us. We have to be very careful not to do something that would indicate that they were all wrong. That's called motzi laz al rishonim. I don't do something that says, I'm right, but everyone else, they weren't kosher. We don't do things even if the halacha backs them. There are instances that we say, forgo the halacha, figure out a different way to do it, but don't do something that makes other people look bad. To overtly say it would be in complete contradiction with the way the halacha wanted us to behave. Even if a person thought it, which would be terrible, why does a person think he's so smart? You know, but to say it, no... Who was first?
I'll put my two hands up. You guys, everybody, my two hands were up, like, signaling out
here. Okay, Adam, yeah.
Okay, so aside from, like, having a vow to, like, make yourself nullified, you can make something unkosher to yourself by taking a vow. You can make it, but in terms of, say you don't take a vow, you don't have anything, or you don't set it aside for some holy purpose, or you don't have something. Can something be kosher for one Jew, but not kosher for another Jew?
Yes.
Like, and so if I do one thing and that person does the same exact thing, it could be good for me and not good for them.
Correct.
So if it works like that, you can have that?
It could be that way, yeah. I'll give you a simple example. If there's a piece of meat that there's a halachic question over, right? And you come to your rabbi and ask him, is this meat kosher? He says, no, it's not kosher. He looks over the halachic question. He looks at the way it was slaughtered. Looks at the animal, says, this isn't kosher. That meat is hereby not kosher. Let's say there's a rabbi who's bigger than him and knows better than him. There can be instances where that rabbi could go to the garbage, pull it out of the garbage, look at it, and say, gee, I disagree with him. This is kosher. Bring it home and tell his wife to cook it. Now, you see him taking it out of the garbage, and you say, wait a second, that's my meat. He tells you, right, but for you it's not kosher. You say, what do you mean for me it's not kosher, and for you it is kosher? Yeah, an example of that would be if it was his disciple that gave the halachic ruling. A rabbi can disagree with his disciple. There can be instances where the disciple chose to go with a certain opinion. Let's say there are two opinions in halacha. He ruled this way, for you it's not kosher. For him it is kosher. His rabbi, your rabbi's rabbi, could disagree with his own student, right? And he could give different ruling. If you'd want to cook it, it would be non-kosher. You'd have to kosher your pot. If he wants to cook it, it's kosher. That's an example.
In a traditional sense, like, for instance, we don't go to, like, Sephardic on pizza.
So that's different. That's a minag. It's not, I mean, asur. It's asur, yeah. It's asur for an Ashkenazi to eat kidneys on Pesach, because that's our minag.
Kidneys? You can't go to Sephardic's house if, under certain conditions, no?
Okay, so that... well, you guys, we're going all over. Let's take a different example. Sfardim hold that for Bishul Akum, you know, Jews not to eat, supposed to eat food that a non-Jew cooked. You could buy food from a non-Jew, but if it's cooked, we say, given certain conditions, it is prohibited, even if all the ingredients are kosher. Ashkenazim hold that it's enough that a Jew turned on the fire, and that's then... the non-Jew could do everything else. Sfardim hold, the Jew has to do everything in the cooking process. Practically everything has to be done by a Jew. You come to a wedding, you see this guy, not Jewish, and he's frying the skillet over the fire. He's making your malawach or whatever it is. You ask the Mashgiach says, I turned on that fire. But you're a Sfardi. So it's badat. It's good for everyone else. It's good for the Ashkenazim. For the Sfardim, you have a problem. Chumus. Chumus, yeah? Chumus is made usually by non-Jews, but Jews turn on the fire. So that's why Rav Eliyahu holds that Sfardim have a problem buying chumus. Because chumus is made with Ashkenazi tradition, kosher for Ashkenazim, not for Sfardim. Yeah.
Can look into this matter? Because I have a feeling that Rav Tovadi Yosef doesn't
agree with Rav Eliyahu.
Doesn't agree with Rav.
Fine. Yeah, I didn't say everyone agrees.
Is that the Iker is the actual placing of the fire.
And by...
not that the whole process.
Okay. Say that. Yeah. No, but say the Gamur. We're not going into the details. I hope no one's learning halacha from what we're saying. We're learning general guidelines. Now, we're not going into the specifics. Say the Gamur. Yeah, Shmuel.
Rob, now, first of all, before I ask this question, I would advise, please, nobody pick up the habit of smoking cigarettes. But I just wanted to ask you, like, what does Judaism's view on smoking cigarettes? I know there's some authorities that say it's okay. Why do they say it's okay? And if it is forbidden, like, why is it forbidden? And, like, in your opinion, what is, in the end, I want to hear your opinion on smoking cigarettes.
Okay. Just saying, that's a totally new topic. Gidon, you wanted something on this topic or something else? Something else. Okay, so...